Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Campbell v. Miller. Mr. Sutherland.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice Easterbrook. Ladies and gentlemen of the court, if it pleases the court, this case is not unfamiliar to the panel, so I'll get right to the issues. The Indianapolis Police Department has an unlimited judicial permission to conduct invasive body searches incident to non-custodial arrests of individuals an officer subjectively believes is in possession of drugs. The trial court rejected the explicit requirements of an individualized objective basis for the invasive search, whether the standard be probable cause or reasonable suspicion.
Are there any cases that you found out there that discuss the parameters of a reasonable search when, as here, the police handcuffed the subject with seemingly no intention of transporting that person anywhere or, incarcerating them?
That's correct, Your Honor. The Marion County Superior Court had issued an executive order of April 19, 2002, which explicitly stated that nonviolent offenses such as the possession of marijuana.
Right, but have you found any cases that discuss the parameters of a reasonable search under those conditions?
Certainly. The Supreme Court cases of Robinson, U.S. versus Robinson, Knowles versus Iowa, Illinois versus Lafayette, Bell versus Walfish, all distinguish the non-custodial arrest from the custodial arrest. In this particular case, it was clear from the very onset that this was a non-custodial arrest. In fact, the trial court found in its ruling on summary judgment that it was a non-custodial arrest.
But so, Mr. Sutherland,
how can one tell whether it's non-custodial until you know the full quantity of drugs the person is carrying?
That's a good question, Your Honor. I think the presumption is that it's a non-custodial arrest if there are some directives requiring the officer to behave in such a way. In this particular case, as articulated by the defendants, they believe that they had a right to inspect the person for further drugs. That right is a public policy goal, if you will, that can best be pursued if that person is taken into custody and then investigated in a closed private setting. In fact, the requirements for this kind of search are two. One is to protect the safety of the officer, and the second is to identify contraband or drugs that might be introduced to a population.
So is it your view that Mr. Campbell would have filed this suit if the officers had first transported him to the police station, performed the same search, but, in privacy, in a private room?
I think that Mr. Campbell would have a very thin, if no, legal constitutional argument if he was transported and the search we're talking about was conducted as part of the processing process of the Marion County Jail, because there's plenty of case law that says a person who is arrested for drugs or suspicion of drugs can be subjected to a more invasive or intensive search.
Well, that's what I wanted to follow up on two things here, really. One is to be perfectly clear about what Mr. Campbell's real complaint is, because it sounds to me as if you're really arguing about the manner in which this search was conducted more than you're arguing about whether the search someplace, somehow, was permissible once the police think that he's dropped a bag of marijuana and so on. Those are facts. They were resolved against you. So if this is a manner of search case, that's one thing I want to make clear. The other thing is you've just now hinted that there may be something beyond this dichotomy of custodial versus non-custodial. There might be some middle ground between searching him in the middle of somebody's backyard in this intrusive manner and actually booking him, that middle ground being at least conducting the search under circumstances that are private, and then if they have a summons policy for certain kinds of offenses, once, as Judge Easterbrook said, they've found out what they're dealing with, maybe they would release him, maybe they wouldn't, but they would have the information. So is it really a dichotomy between custodial and non-custodial? Does Marion County forbid people from walking through the door of the police office?
I think, to answer your question, Judge, that there is, in fact, the same standard, and that is you have to have a particularized individual suspicion, whether the arrest takes place out Or I'm sorry, the search takes place.
Oh, I understand that, but once, suppose you have that particularized suspicion that this man has drugs. Is it your view then that the police can take him out into the middle of the street, strip him bare naked, and search him?
Of course not. In fact,
so in other words, there's something about the manner in which the search, even if it's a perfectly valid search in terms of the reason to conduct it, there's something about the manner.
Well, of course. That was one of the arguments, and that was one of the issues we raised at the trial. It was not only whether or not that he should not have been subjected to the search, but the fact that the conditions and circumstances and the details and the privacy of the search and the location of the search were all, in our view, subject to constitutional scrutiny and failed in each instance. For example, the Supreme Court has said numerous times that it is the public nature of this search more than anything else that suggests that this is a severe violation of a personal liberty interest. So that even if a person were searched in the jail and there was the possibility that somebody of the other gender or any public person could see this search, whether or not it was viewed or not, the possibility was thought to be so critical that that search could be deemed unconstitutional, even if it was in a jailhouse setting.
So any time that there's a home, for instance, nearby, even though it's totally unoccupied, the search could not take place within those parameters?
Your Honor, and my view and the argument we have made is that the Supreme Court gives the police officers plenty of prerogatives. They could say, we think there's a problem here, let's get a search warrant. Or we think that there's a reason to take this person downtown and search him in a either a district police station or in a jail processing center. But in a backyard, which is what we have here, then that's clearly an open public area that is impermissible under the constitutional parameters enunciated in Robinson.
Are you challenging the jury instructions with respect to that aspect of the claim?
Yes.
What's the challenge?
I'm sorry, do we challenge the jury instruction?
With
no, we were not.
With respect to that aspect of the claim, right, as Judge Wood said, there are two aspects. One is whether they can conduct the search at all,
right,
and the other is where they conduct it, the circumstances of its conduct.
No.
I take it you're not challenging the jury instructions with respect to the
latter. You're correct. I misspoke at first.
Well,
we did not.
Not challenging the jury instructions, why is the evidence not sufficient to support the verdict on that aspect of the claim?
Well, I think what we're challenging, Judge, is the fact that the search itself was impermissible. And then the second element of that, which is what the court was instructing the jury on, was the public nature of that. I think the element...
So what you're now saying is that this search is too public claim has effectively dropped out of the case. If you're not challenging the jury instructions or the sufficiency of the evidence, there's nothing for us to do about it.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I think that we would have to say that the public part of that was adequately addressed in the instruction. But
wait a minute. I thought that you were saying, and actually I have a concern anyway under cases of the Supreme Court such as United States against Ornelas, that there is a degree to which this is all a question of law. Once the jury has established the facts being that the bag of marijuana is thrown down, the facts being that there is a reason to detain this person and to search him, there remain questions of law under the Fourth Amendment. And the Supreme Court has indicated, in the light of the interest in uniform application of constitutional standards, there are issues of law that remain for the court to decide. So I don't know if you intend to concede away, as you seem to have just done, the entire manner of search part of your claim.
Well, with regard to the instructions, I don't think we have raised any other instructions.
Right, but in what way then? I mean, you moved under Rule 50, right?
Under Rule 50B,
right,
for a directed verdict based upon the fact that the Indianapolis Police Department had admitted to a practice and policy of conducting searches.
It was unreasonable.
Unreasonable searches. And the searches...
And then, so you're saying, as a matter of law, to strip somebody in a backyard, I guess this is a suburban area, right, with houses around...
It is. It's a suburban residential area.
And there's no dispute about the facts of that. Nobody says
no question.
This is a farm in the middle of nowhere.
No. No, this is a backyard, the high-density subdivisions, the houses are probably on one-tenth of an acre, that kind of thing. But the request for a directed verdict was based upon the totality of the circumstances, which required the court to find as a matter of law that there was not an articulated basis for this kind of search.
Did you say at that time it's also as a matter of law unreasonable to strip search people in the middle of a backyard?
That we did. That was part of our argument on the directed verdict, clearly that.
Okay.
But what we were talking about was that the instruction, I mean, what we're, I think, sort of, the court had given only two conditions for the jury to consider on whether or not the search was based upon a reasonable suspicion of probable cause, and those two were the nature of the offense and arrestee's appearance and conduct. Those are so subjective and so arbitrary that, in our view, that gives judicial approval to the most broadly applied practice, not policy, but practice of officers searching individuals who they subjectively believe may carry drugs. In our view, for example, a 16-year-old student who happened to have a marijuana cigarette in her purse, or a 45-year-old businessman who had an unmarked prescription bottle, would be subjected to the same search, an anal cavity search, that Mr. Campbell was subjected to, because the criteria are not established in the instruction to limit the officer to a specific individualized suspicion as a basis for that more invasive search. There's no public policy justification for these kinds of things. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time, if I could, for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Ms. Hasanatka.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is a case in which a jury found that Officer Miller had reasonable suspicion to conduct a search of Mr. Campbell.
And let me just say right away, Mrs. Hatsunak, as you can tell from the questions that I've at least posed, the part of this case that concerns me has not to do with whether the search could take place somewhere, somehow, because questions were posed to the jury answered them in a certain way. What concerns me is the aspect of the Rule 50 motion that dealt with the manner of the search, because I find it unpersuasive that even if you weren't going to lodge somebody in the Marion County Jail, the alternative is to strip somebody and search his anal cavity in the middle of a backyard. There's a long distance between putting somebody in the jail and deciding whether you need to put him in the jail in a dignified fashion. This is not an exclusionary rule case. It's a 1983 case. The Supreme Court in Hudson against Michigan made it very clear that the Fourth Amendment does have reasonableness restrictions that go to the manner in which searches are done. It just was saying there that you didn't use the exclusionary rule, but we don't have that issue here. So I'm very concerned about the manner of this search and this claim. I envision in Indianapolis people are going to be anally searched in the middle of the street next, since you don't think there's any restriction whatsoever.
Your Honor, as an initial matter, there were two directed verdicts that were filed by the plaintiff. The first was at the conclusion of evidence.
Well, that's what's supposed to happen. Judgment as a matter of law first has to be raised before the case goes to the jury, and then it needs to be renewed afterwards.
Yes, of course. But the challenge that Mr. Campbell made to the grounds on which he moved for the directed verdict.
There's no such thing as a directed verdict in federal court.
I'm sorry, for judgment as a matter of law pursuant to Rule 50. The grounds upon which he moved both times dealt more with the whether the officers were entitled to do the search in the first place.
You say more. Mr. Sutherland just now represented to us that the motion did include a complaint about the policy of the Indianapolis police officers to conduct the searches in this way.
Your Honor, I don't believe that that is actually the case. After trial, when plaintiff moved for judgment as a matter of law, a post-trial judgment for a post-trial motion for judgment as a matter of law. The grounds were that the search performed was not performed with sufficient justification because it was simply based upon the facts as it the facts that it was conducted incident to arrest. But in any event, Your Honor, the search itself was not a strip search. The court properly...
Well, look, they pull his pants down part of the way enough so that they can put their hands on his buttocks and separate them. That's, in the relevant part of the body, a strip search. Yes, maybe his shirt's still on, but I don't want to get tied up in how much... You don't disagree with that. The officer testifies that that's what he did.
Certainly. The officer did testify that he pulled Mr. Campbell's pants back and down. The upper portion of his buttocks were exposed.
Sure.
He used his other hand to separate the cheeks and visually look inside.
Yeah, that's...
However, I respectfully...
Pretty offensive, actually, if done in the middle of the public. I don't think there's... Doing it in the police station, in an appropriately private place, with gender protections and the like, completely different situation.
Your Honor, and in fact, the backyard, there's evidence in the record that the backyard was actually quite private. Now, I agree, it is a different location
Look,
than the station
I wouldn't,
house.
I wouldn't go without clothes in my backyard, and it's a suburban area, and there are houses around, and maybe people aren't looking out their window, or maybe they are. You never know.
Well, the officers testified, Officer Miller testified, that he chose to take Mr. Miller to Mr. Campbell to this backyard to give him more privacy.
But how does he know that it's enough? I mean, why can't he just take him to the police station, conduct the investigation he needs to conduct, and let him go? Or not, or keep him?
Your Honor, he could have done that. You're right, Your Honor, except for he didn't do that. And the question is whether what he did was reasonable. And when you apply the Bell v. Wolfish test, as the court instructed the jury to apply, when you balance the invasiveness of the search versus the need to do the search, as a matter of law, the search was reasonable and justifiable.
Ms. Hasanaka, I'd like to ask you, I need to clear up a factual question, and I think that will help me. So, the state's brief says that prior to Officer Miller's decision to search Mr. Campbell, he knew that Mr. Campbell matched the clothing and physical description of a fleeing drug suspect. Now, according to Mr. Campbell's brief, however, before the intrusive search began, Officer Dooley had arrived on the scene and confirmed to Officer Miller that there was no probable cause to believe that Mr. Campbell was the suspect who had fled from the unrelated transaction. So Miller's similarities to the fleeing drug suspect were, or surely should have been anyway, irrelevant to Officer Miller's decision to do a search under the clothing. Isn't that correct?
No, Your Honor. Respectfully, it's not. Officer Dooley saw three men who he suspected were involved in a hand-to-hand drug transaction. He saw them exchanging something with their hands. He put out the description of a dark-colored sweater with bright stripes, multicolored tones in it, and might have braids. He also stated dark color pants, medium complexion. The suspect was 5'8 to 5'10. He testified that he did not get a good look at the suspect's face or his hair because he was focused more on the hands. He was focused on what they were doing with their hands, whether they had weapons, that kind of thing. Now, when Officer Dooley arrived at the scene of 3415 Colorado, where Mr. Campbell was being detained by Officer Miller, Officer Dooley testified that the clothing did match perfectly, that the build, the skin tone did match perfectly. However, because he didn't get a good look at this man's face, he did not feel comfortable arresting him for fleeing. Officer Dooley never 100% said it is or it is not the person that ran away from me. Thus, Officer Miller, in his mind, still had that doubt that this could be the person that ran away from Officer Dooley. Additionally, Officer Miller instructed Mr. Campbell to stop two times. Mr. Campbell did not comply. He ordered Mr. Campbell to get on the ground. Mr. Campbell did not comply. And Officer Miller testified in court that after three instances of refusal to comply with his commands, this raised a question for him about what is this suspect's intentions. He dropped the drugs, but then continued to move away from the officer. He continued to not comply with the officer's commands. If he had already dropped the drugs, then this raised a question in Officer Miller's mind of maybe he has more because he's still fleeing. So Mr. Campbell in his briefing does urge the court to ignore those facts, but the facts were highly relevant and did inform Officer Miller's decision. And since we are coming off of a jury verdict in favor of defendants, the court cannot ignore those facts.
Does the record in this case contain any data on the percentage of drug dealers who secret drugs under their clothing or in body cavities?
Your Honor, it does not contain
Isn't facts. That terribly important to the reasonableness of this practice?
Yes, it would be. The record does not contain percentages as you
asked. It's terribly important to the reasonableness of this practice. Why did neither side see fit to introduce any data?
There was no data, Your Honor. However,
there's data.
I'm sorry, there was no data in the record.
Exactly. That's the problem. The police department has to know what percentage of the people it actually hauls into the station and searches thoroughly is carrying drugs in their body cavities. I'm sure that I'm not sure. But I would be confident that this is the kind of thing on which there are published data using aggregate data from, say, the Chicago police or the New York police that one could figure out, is it 1 in 10? Is it 1 in 10,000? I mean, that difference would be very important for the reasonableness of the practice. Now, maybe it's just hopeless in this case because neither side did the homework. But if we're going to figure out whether the practice is reasonable, we need to know what's going on in the world.
And my problem with it is that the government's brief states that the officers weren't able to make the decision of whether to release Mr. Campbell or whether to transport him to jail until they were certain that he didn't possess more marijuana or more serious drugs. And it seems to me that's true in every drug case, that every drug case would, you know, require a search at least as intrusive as this one here.
Your Honor, that statement about the decision of when to arrest was more in response to the question of whether U.S. v. Robinson would apply for a search at the station house. However, the reason that Mr. Campbell was searched was because of all of the facts that were presented to Officer Miller, both with respect to Mr. Campbell in particular, as well as his general knowledge about suspects arrested for drug offenses. Your Honor,
in other words, what was it about this case that assuages or should assuage Judge Rovner's concern? What drug case would not raise the risk that the person was carrying more?
Your Honor, the facts of this case
but
did raise
which
a concern.
Fact? That certainly not that he was uncomfortable in the presence of police. Drug people usually are. in fact, I can't remember a single one who wasn't. There's nothing about the quantity here, a bag of marijuana.
The fact that the bag of marijuana was dropped and the fleeing continued, Your Honor made the
and
point
does
about...
Does that distinguish this? What drug case does that distinguish this from?
These are not the facts before the court, but if there were a case where someone had a bag of marijuana discovered and nothing else, then perhaps there would be no reason to do another search. However, in Mary Beth G.,
there were data suggesting that that affects the probability of finding more drugs, but of course there are none.
That's right, Your Honor. There's no hard data. However,
I'm sure there are hard data. It's just that the lawyers haven't bothered putting it in the record.
Yes, Your Honor. We did not put it in the record, but you're right. There probably is data out there. But there was testimony by the chief of police, Officer Miller, Officer Lamley, Officer Dooley, that said that it's frequent.
And the chief of police's testimony, indeed, suggested that it was so frequent, in his opinion, that you should always do this. You know, the woman with a joint in her purse or anything else. He thought that an immediate and thorough body search was just one of those things you ought to do.
Your Honor, he did testify that, to him, drugs are, the war against drugs is a very serious thing. However, he did also testify that you need to use a combination of what the officer knows about this particular arrest in combination with what the officer knows in general.
Could I ask you this, please? When subjects are arrested for illegal possession of a gun, do police officers, if you know, routinely perform this type of check for other weapons? In other words, is this just for drugs, or...
Your Honor, I apologize. I don't know the answer to your question, and it is not
guns
in the record.
Guns may be harder to hide in body cavities.
But not ammunition.
Right. They may be. However, there was testimony from Chief Barker that that they found guns inside people's pants as well. Your Honors, Officer Miller and the City of Indianapolis respectfully request that this court uphold the jury verdict and affirm the district court's ruling on plaintiff's motion for judgment as a matter of law, uphold the district court's jury instructions, and affirm the district court's decision to exclude certain witnesses from testifying.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Sutherland?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to address one of the questions you raised. We raised three grounds for appeal. One was the denial of the motion for judgment on the evidence. The second issue was the failure of the court to give a proper instruction. Jury instruction number 8 was inadequate. And the third one was the exclusion of three critical witnesses, which prejudiced the plaintiff's case. One of those witnesses, Ralph Staples, was the chief deputy prosecutor for felonies in Marion County, author of this rule, and which he could have clarified the requirements for specificity, individualized specificity to justify the intrusive searches that were being conducted as a practice to demonstrate the inconsistency with the policy that every defense lawyer and every prosecutor understands, whether it be an exclusionary rule issue or just a Fourth Amendment invasion of privacy issue. The other two witnesses would have, because we had the evidence presented both in deposition and earlier, would have been able to testify anecdotally as to their success in finding drugs. And what we found is that they didn't find them very often at all. And in fact, they escalated the problem by challenging somebody to submit to this invasive search. And if they refused, they were often charged with resisting, quite understandably, because who would want to agreeably submit to that kind of search?
So you're saying your excluded witnesses would have furnished at least something in the way of the evidence?
Most certainly, because we had the practice and policy issue that we couldn't even address except by the limited testimony of the chiefs. And the chiefs could tell us that it was their policy to pervasively allow the officer's discretion without any limitations that I could identify. I asked them over and over again. And they just said, it's a drug war. We should be doing this. And the fact, I think I said, the fact that you find it maybe one or two times, does that matter? He said, no, it doesn't.
So,
and that's testimony.
Are you arguing that you tried to bring the statistics in?
I can't say statistics, Judge, but we tried to bring in evidence because it's very difficult to track these statistics. And I can help you with that too, Judge. And that is when there's an arrest, unless you're going to investigate each and every person, you're not going to find what sort of search was conducted on any report. It wasn't identified in this report. So there isn't a real easy way to do that unless you do a survey or you install some sort of questionnaire to track that kind of information and then develop the statistical basis for it. But going back to the reality of things, even if there were a high probability, the court still requires an individualized, specific basis, objective basis for this intrusive search. And that's absent here, and it will be absent in every case henceforth unless this court looks at the record and finds that the ruling denying the motion for judgment on the evidence or denying our recommendation to amend instruction number 8 to include the individualized language is considered and is made part of the law. We would ask this court to either enter judgment against the city and Mr. Miller, Officer Miller, or in the alternative to remand for further findings, allowing proper jury instruction and allowing the witnesses that we had called to come forward and present the evidence. Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.